hasn't come on yet, but I just got on myself, so.
Okay, me too.
Good evening.
Good evening.
We will begin. We are on the studying the Zohar from the Sulam commentary in Parashat Vayera, section 7, and we'll begin with Pasuk 124 after L'shem Yehud. L'shem Yehud, Kutcha Barichu Ishkinte, Bitkilu Urkinu, Utkilu, Utkilu Urkinu, Leachta, L'shem Yudhe Bavate, V'Yehuda, Shalim B'shem Kol Yisrael, Limud Torah Mitzvah, La'asok Torah mitzvah. Vayhino amadunai Eloheinu aleinu ma'asei yadeinu kunenei aleinu ma'asei yadeinu kunenehu. Pasuk 124. Rabbi Acha Azal Likpar Parsha Ata Legabei Ushpizeya Gachishu Alayhu Kol b'nei mata amaru tavra rabba ata aka nezel legabeya ato legabeya amaru leya lachas al avadana amar leho mahu Amaru Leyad Itshiva Yomin Bishare Botana Bemata Wakol Yoma Itzkaka La Itzbatal. The translation: Rabbi Acha went to the village of Tarsha, where he stayed at an inn. The people of that village whispered about him, saying, "A great man has arrived here. Let us go to him." They said to him, "Do you not have mercy on us because of the plague?" He said to them, "What plague?" They replied, "A plague struck the village 7 days ago, and every day that passes, it becomes worse." My commentary: the pasuk is clear as written. This verse is a beginning of the completion of the healing of the incense. Questions, comments, thoughts?
I don't remember a Rabbi Acha before, so I'm wondering about his name and the meaning of his name and his relationship. And its relationship to pestilence or plagues.
He's not one of the 10 people, but look at the Hebrew on his name. It's really clear what his name is.
Brother?
Right.
Of course, he's got two olives, too, in the middle of a chet. Well, a chet in the middle of two olives. I should have said.
Yes, his name is spelled Aleph Chet Aleph.
Mm-hmm.
And so what is the meaning of that? The first two letters spell the word Ach, which is brother. Also, in the case of Moses and Yethro, it represents father-in-law, is the way they translate it, but it's really the brothers, because Moses and Yethro are Cain and Abel in reincarnation. But so, Ach, Aleph, is brothers in unity. And so that is the meaning of his name. Then the other important word that I was looking at it the other day, it's Tarsha, is the city. It's Chet Rish. Same as what?
Well, it's pretty close to Tarshish with Jonah.
Yes, it's cognate to Tarshish, except Tarshish mm-hmm. starts with a Taf, and this is with a Tef.
Well,
but
it's
the same part of the mouth, and you can substitute those letters. But mm-hmm. even if you don't substitute those letters, you can permute it to be nine gates. The number, the tet represents the number nine, and then you can spell Rosh, Resh Aleph Shin, which is the head, and you can reverse it and spell it Shin Aleph Resh Sha'ar, which means straight.
Yes.
So it's a truly powerful verse just looking at the two names, the two words that are dealing with names in the Pasuk.
Mm-hmm.
But you were asking the right questions. Go ahead, I'm sorry.
That's okay. I'm wondering what word in Aramaic is plague. Is it, it wouldn't be tarzia. Not tarzia. What's the word? That's all right.
In Hebrew, it's...
We just had it in the last word version.
Right. And I'm looking for it, but it's a hay and a gimel and an olive or a hay.
Let's see, how far down is it? Before they replied,
it's not the same. It's not using the same letters from the Hebrew, so
no. No,
I'm not sure. But my sense is it's either Motana or Bema'ata.
Okay.
that's basically just based on the flow of the words in the translation. But as you know, I'm not an Aramaic scholar.
Well, I'm definitely not either one. But Mata, with the bed in front of it, you've got the Mem and the Tom, with the word get, and then you have two olives in front of each one of the Toms. So it kind of might well be plague.
That's what I saw. That was what I was saying. That's one of the words that I think was talking about it.
Right.
Let's see if we see that same word else earlier. Yeah, well, we see the word Aleph Tav Aleph. So, and Rabbah would be a great plague. So it I think that's the word it's being used. Aleph Tav Aleph. Did anybody else want to make a comment or a thought or a question?
Yes. How did they know he was a great man? Was it by his performance, or was he known in the other cities? Was he teaching? Did he have students with him? How did they know he was a great man?
How do you know that somebody is an important man today? I use the word important rather than great, but it's essentially the same idea. A great man in Judaism is a high spiritual level. A great man in the physical world is judged primarily on the attributes of business acumen or great wealth or great inventions, significant inventions. But how do we decide if somebody is an important person? If you've been watching it at all, the coverage of the coronavirus during this shutdown, the cable news people, and I'm sure the local news people have a similar system. They invite doctors in to interview and ask questions. You know, they know what the answers are before they ask the questions, but the people who are being entertained by that news segment don't know the answers. And they ask the questions. But how do they decide that doctor is an important doctor, that he's knowledgeable? It's the same way. How do you decide that a doctor is a good doctor? I sent my sick uncle to him and he was cured. But that's not the definition of a great doctor. It means he's had similar training to all of the doctors. And I'm not criticizing the medical community. I'm just describing the way the system works. Doctors attend medical school, and in medical school, they are indoctrinated into a way of thinking. How did they know he was a great man? Because his reputation preceded him. Because he may have announced that he was a rabbi. He may have arrived with a carriage, or he may have arrived with a horse rather than a donkey. Every generation had different standards, just as we have different standards today. The fact fact that the Zohar describes him as a great man, but the Zohar doesn't say he's a great man. The people of that village called him a great man. We learn his greatness from his name, because we just went through the analysis of the name. And that's really the only way you can know if the spiritual level of someone in our generation, by doing the analysis of his name and then looking at what he does with his life. Is he following the potential growth of that name? Or is he just, that's his name and he really doesn't change? When a child is given a name, when the people of a generation is given a name, when the people of a generation give names to certain things, like where did the coronavirus get its name? Well, it got its name from the fact that the microscope, it looks like it's wearing a crown. And that is essentially where it's got its name. But when you talk about a person, we've been given a tool. If we do some quick analysis on the gematria, on the letters, what are the meaning of the letters, we can see the different attributes that soul has attached to it, because we know the name the soul was given when it went into the body. That name is what it is to do in this life. It's a predetermined predilection to the attributes that soul will acquire. But not everybody acquires the attributes for the name. There's I'm making up a number, but there's 10 million people named David. Are they all kings? Do they all deal with the attribute of manifestation? Do they all deal with the attribute of being royalty? Of course not. They each have different aspects of the meaning of that name David. And how can we evaluate them? Well, we have to go through a process as students of Kabbalah. We have to look at the name. We have to do some analysis of the name by gematria. But then we have to look at, see where is this person in his spiritual life? Well, he's only 3 years old, so we don't really expect him to be a manifester yet. But you can see hints in his behavior about his ability to manifest, the way he interacts with other three-year-old children in his nursery school. But most of us come to the study of Kabbalah in middle age, what used to be called middle age, in 40s and 50s, some in teens, some in 20s. But the ability to make snap judgments, meaning I see the person and I look into its soul, that takes a high spiritual level. That takes someone who is connected to their intuition. Malcolm, did that answer the question, or do you want to pursue it in a different way?
No, sir. That answered it. Thank you.
Okay. Are there any other comments? Well, let's take a look at verse 125. Amar lehu, excuse me, leho, nezel levekanishka, venit barachame, min kadam ku chabarifu, ad hawo azle, ato we amaru, uluni ufloni, me too ufloni, ufloni natu, lamut, amar leho rabbi acha, leyat, ita lekai ma hake, bishata dechika. The translation. He responded, "Let us go to the synagogue and plead for mercy in front of the Holy One, blessed be He." As they were on their way, people came up to them and told them the names of the people who had died or were about to die. Rabbi Acha said to them, "This is not the time to stand around talking. Time presses." My commentary. The pasuk is clear as written. Consciousness needs to always be on other people and not on themselves, not on ourselves. Ultimately, this will be Hashem as our consciousness. This is the goal of Kabbalah study. Questions, comments, thoughts?
It doesn't say if they reached the synagogue.
It doesn't say they reached the synagogue because in this pasuk they didn't. Mm-hmm. They were stopped by people expressing their fears. And the way people express their fears is by talking about the people who are ill. Have you heard so-and-so is ill? Did you hear so-and-so passed away? It's really a way of people coping with their fears. It's a focus on people other than themselves, but not really, because remember, we are all one vessel. So when we talk about other people, even if it's not considered gossip, it's taking us away from the consciousness of connecting to Hashem. The rabbi said, "Let us go to the synagogue and pray to God, stand in front of Hashem and ask for mercy." That's the goal, being connected to Hashem. But what stands in our way? Why don't we do that every moment of every day? Because we get interruptions. We get other people telling us stories. Have you heard this? Have you heard that? Are you aware? What's the news of the day? Is it human, what I'm describing? Absolutely. But we did not come into this world to remain human. We came into this world as a human, and we are trying to leave this world on a level that is higher than human, which we usually call the level of divine. But it's really a human level, but it's higher than what we came in with. Is your connection to Hashem and the elevation of your intuition, is that human? The answer is yes, but it's not what the other people in our communities normally have, normally strive for. The desire to be close to Hashem gets manifested through spiritual growth. So now that I've confused everybody.
I have a question.
Go ahead.
And we're supposed to, okay, we don't come in as humans, but we become human. And our strive is to become divine.
We do come in as a human being. We come in as a baby. And a baby is a human being.
But in the womb, we're not human beings. Is that that's what they say?
That's an interesting question that I really don't have an answer for. I will give you some information. The Talmud describes the fetus in the womb as a murderer. Because the nature of the fetus is selfishness. It's hungry. It draws from the mother. It needs nourishment. It needs warmth. It needs caring. Whatever the new womb provides, that is being drawn from the mother. And then the mother's life is at risk. That's why God forbids women still die in childbirth. So is the fetus a human being? It's the lowest level of human being because it's the totally conscious of itself. I'm sorry if I interrupted you, Martha. Go ahead.
Okay, so the next question is, we are destined to become divine, all of us. We choose to become divine. That's what our mission is.
The goal is to become divine. That is correct.
Okay, I guess I need you to give me the definition from a Zohar what divine means.
One way of understanding divine is holy. The Hebrew word is kedusha, holiness, or kadosh, holy.
Okay. But how can we become holy if we have so many to correct and we do it in this lifetime that we in the lifetime have? So we would have to come back in many generations to become divine? Or is it part of our soul? The ones that we think we did correct in our lifetime, is that part of the self that's the brain? Still have parts of the self that's not.
You've been breaking up, so your question's a little hard for me to follow, but with the gist of what I got is you're questioning when we make a tikkun. If you could repeat it, it would be helpful.
Okay, my question is that we may not be divine in our lifetime that we have on Earth now, but maybe part of our souls have reached a small part of tikkun, and that part of the soul is considered divine. But we may have to come back many generations to be a complete divine soul.
Is that a question or a statement?
It's a question. It's a question. Sorry, I didn't present it as a question.
No, that's fine, because you're describing the truth. You're describing when do you become kadosh? When do you become holy? The Torah says, do certain actions of mitzvot because I am Hashem and I am holy. When you make a tikkun, whether it's a small tikkun or a large tikkun, each tikkun is a spiritual movement towards greater holiness. Each tikkun is a spiritual movement towards cleansing and purification. What's the difference between purification and holiness? Purification is what takes place through the mitzvot. Purification is what takes place in the actions of the desire to receive. When you transform a desire to receive for oneself alone into a desire to receive in order to share. But when that soul moves from the left column to the right column, it transforms from purifying to holiness. Purification is a process. Holiness is a state of being. You're holy or you're not holy. You're holy for an instant. You did a tikkun. You did a mitzvah. For that instant, you are holy. Why don't you remain holy? Because you're still in the process. You haven't left the left column completely. You still have connections to the desire to receive for oneself alone. The meaning of divine is a state of being that we would name holiness.
Now, you said soul. So there's many, we have a soul, but there's so many parts of the soul in each limb of our body. You know, the soul,
yes,
the left shoulder, the right shoulder.
And each of those parts have different levels. You know,
okay, so
out of convenience, I use the word soul. But if I were to be accurate, I would say, are we talking about the nefesh or the ruach or the neshama? And which part of the body, which soul spark am I talking about? But out of convenience, I just said soul.
Okay, that's fine. I understand.
Are there any other comments? Because we're about out of time. Have a beautiful evening, and our later class will count the Omer and also study from the Ari.
Thank you, Hanok.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Shalom.
Shalom to all.
Shalom. Shalom to all.
Shalom.